Welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Interview. Today, two people that have been on the show before with our first film, Slept, decided to come back and bring me their second film, Mandeo of the Dead. And make sure you find that on Amazon Prime because it's a fabulous, funny film, and so was this one. And both interviews are amazing. Gina Dunn and Scott Dunn, welcome back.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Thanks for having
me. I'm doing great. I miss you guys.
Miss you, too.
So, why did it take you so long to make a second film?
Well, I think that it was relatively, let's see, we talked last year, and I think we were talking about doing this then. So, this movie got written in like 3 months or so, and then we shot it, and we just released in November of this year. Yeah. So, I don't know.
So, we shot in January, released this year.
So, if one of you, Scott, try to speak into the mic a little bit closer, because you're a little bit off. I know Gina's right in front. I can just tell by the way you guys are talking.
Yeah.
So, I just want to get into this. So, before we even get into the film, you guys released, like, a teaser, I guess, trailer, and discussed how to make a movie beforehand?
Oh, the Film Courage interview?
Yes, that's the one.
Yeah, that was a good one. Yeah.
Well, this actually happened after we shot the film and everything. We did a kind of like a stint for Exposé with Film Courage, partnering up with them, and they just, it's like a video diary talking about why you shouldn't make a movie, but really it's why you can make a movie. And so that was a lot of fun.
Now, I guess I want to get into that just a bit. Do you think this, did you make it to help independent film creators, or just felt something you wanted to do?
That I want to help people. We want people to, because I know that when people are trying to start their own movies, there's like people are begging for things like, well, what was your story? How did you make it? How much money did you use? Like, what are some things I can do for my movie? And yeah, I think that the more we can help people just get started on making something, the better. And yeah, it was really just a helpful tool for first timers, I guess.
Okay, well, you're a second-timer now. What have you learned from your first film to your second film?
The first film was loosely scripted. This one was, fully scripted. And I guess the power of writing script ahead of time, that sounds an obvious one, it just rang really true this time. Like, make sure you have a solid script that you can go from. Prepare as much as possible. I just felt like we were more prepared, don't you?
Yeah. The other thing was starting marketing early. Like, as soon as you have a script, you already need to start having your social media, start outreaching, getting people, get a buzz going throughout the whole phases of production.
So I got to say, I mean, there's a lot of influence I find in this script. I really don't want to ruin one of them because the one's right near the end. I really do want to discuss it, but I'm not going to. You know which one I'm referring to. So why the time element, I guess?
Time travel is, I've been wanting to make a time travel movie since I saw Back to the Future. I love those movies so freaking much. And I think a lot of the times it's like, for time travel, how can you find the best time machine, right? And so I was reading up about astral projection, and I'm like, you know what, that sounds like a fun way to go back in time. I haven't seen too many people do it. I don't think I've ever seen it yet. But that was just a way into time travel that I felt like was fresher.
So I do want to ask, my favorite guy in the film, besides you, obviously, and your wife, would be Ed. I think his name was Ed, the drug guy in the Hawaiian shirt. Where did you find him?
Cousin Andy. That's played by Sean Liang. And I feel the same way. I love that guy. He came in through auditions, and he was auditioning for a different role, for Darth, yes. He wasn't quite right for that. But
no, definitely not.
Right. But his energy, I had a reaction kind of like you. It's like, wow, this guy is really good. Something about him is really fun. So we ended up writing an additional character for him just from his audition. And, it worked out nicely. Glad you like him.
Oh, I want a whole movie about him. I think it's there.
I think it's there, too. I think we could do a whole spin-off on him, yeah.
Now, you're a low-production company. You have to find a location. And here, it looks like you have two distinct locations, maybe three.
Yeah.
So, where did you steal them from?
Well, so, The one where Jackson is pitching his tent in someone's backyard.
Yes.
Grandmother's house. And actually, the lady is my grandmother.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
Yes, my grandmother made her film debut on the day of the death. She's very cute. And then the apartment, Jay's apartment, was that apartment location was lent to us by our co-producers, Chessa Mauman and Ian Summer. And, yeah, so that helped us save money. So the only location that we paid for was the house, May's house. So because the locations, we didn't have to pay pretty much anything on it except for the house, we were able to set dress, like, the behind the scenes very well.
So I do have one question. This may be a picky question. Why is one the uncle's name Jay and his name Jackson? That really threw me off for about a good 20 minutes trying to figure out which one was which, because I kept hearing Jay, Jay, Jay all the time.
That's it. You know what? You always have unique questions, and I'm always thrown off about it in a good way. Like, I'm always like, which way is the sports writing? And I don't know. I've never heard anyone say Jay and Jackson are similar. But I don't know. These are two characters, honestly, based on characters I made in high school. And they were just named Jay and Jackson back then, so I really just stole their names.
So they don't exist. I mean, I think Uncle Jay does exist.
No, not to me, but I bet you a lot of people have an Uncle Jay, you know?
And I was really hoping, I mean, this is maybe weird, that the cereal is going to play more of a role.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, in the sequel, we're trying to work that in there.
I was hoping so. Now, where does the name come from then?
That's just another, you know, Mandeo. That's just one. It's just a character I made up a long time ago, and that I guess Mandeo sounded funny to me.
Well, it felt funny to me, too. I was like, okay, this is interesting. Now, did you have problems weaving your story? Because, I mean, it seems to have very distinct acts, but you don't really, until you start astral projecting them, I'm really kind of going, where am I going? Which I like that about your film. That I was guessing where you were leading to. I mean, you spent a good half an hour establishing the main leads. Mm-hmm. The Uber driver, things are going on, but not a lot of it makes sense.
Right, right. It starts making sense as you go later and things start paying off a little more. I think it is interesting. You're spending this weird half hour getting to know these characters, like you said. But once you get to know them, the story shifts and takes you on a more supernatural route, which then it really starts getting a role. Yeah, I don't know. That's very astute. I agree. It's kind of like a weird beginning, but if you stick with it, it is worth it.
And I also think that the purpose of that is really world building. All the characters are really colorful, really quirky. So you really want to establish the relationships between them all as the plot unfolds.
Now, I have to ask Scott here. When you're writing the script, do you go, that'd be perfect for my wife, or do you let her choose what she wants to do?
This one I just wrote. I didn't write it for her necessarily. I was just writing it. And I think you were naturally attracted to it, right?
Yeah, I thought fur was fun. I really wanted to take a crack at it.
So she made me. She forced me.
Did you ever thought of not playing the lead?
Yes, I have, just not on this one, at all, not at any point. This one I wanted to, this goes back historically for me, like I've said a couple times, it's, this one I didn't want to have anyone else do it. I'm sure there'll be plenty of, situations where people are like, well, don't be in this next one, and I'll be happy to step aside, but, you know, this one I just enjoyed doing.
I guess I was wondering, how'd you grow your mustache?
Very carefully. It's like, it looks like one that it would just blow away, like it's like little needles. That's just how my facial hair grows in. Oh, you know what I did? I can't sculpt it very well, like just with a shaver. I actually ended up plucking some.
Wow.
I know. I had this little toilet paper and I would pick each individual.
Oh.
Yeah, it was tough, but that was the only way I knew how to like landscaping.
Why would you do that to yourself?
I don't know. I had dedication, foolishness, boredom.
Well, I guess so. Did you want Jackson to come off like such a loser throughout the movie?
Oh, Well, lovable one, yeah. Definitely a lovable loser. Someone who, like, stopped growing after, like, junior high, sort of, you know, in his mind. And I just, it actually took a little bit with Sean McBride, the actor, plays Jackson. He and I would do these rehearsals together and really try. It took a couple to find, like, the right level of foolishness. But I feel like he has, like, a really good warmth to that foolishness. If he didn't have the warmth, it would be a little harder to swallow.
Yeah, I guess I gotta say, I mean, Jay is not likable in the beginning, but I like him at the end, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's, you know, that's the thing I've been hearing. When you first see Jay, he's like really gruff, like, oh, he's just gonna be a dick the whole movie. But I see where he's coming from because if I was in his position, it'd be hard to reconcile with someone like Jackson, I guess, you know, and he's just reacting to that. But they really bond throughout the movie. And by the end, yeah, I think he's a good romance.
Yeah. He at first, Jay's really, he's reclusive, he's cantankerous, but then eventually you see him trying to save everybody. Like, he always does, his actions speak louder than his words.
Yeah.
Now, early on in the film, you'll say, vampires are a guilty pleasure. Now, Is that something personal you consider a guilty pleasure, or you just think everybody likes vampires?
Guilty pleasure on both our parts. We have this movie. What is this movie? It's
Only Lovers Left Alive.
I've seen it.
That's one. Like, that's Gina and I. Like, without, you know, minus the blood and all that. Like, we just love being in our little bug nest, ordering pizza, which we just did, too. We had some pizza just before we did this interview right here.
Well, I have to ask you, favorite pizza place then?
King of New York.
King of New York Pizzeria. It's in L.A. Really good.
There you go. See, now we know where to go.
Exactly. Make sure you get the Mexican Coke. It's so freaking good.
I do have notes. What is an ass jacket?
Just imagine that. It's just like if you could wear a jacket made out of ass. That's what it would look like.
I will have to trust you on that one. So, when you start doing your astral projection, did you consider it was more like an acid trip?
No, I wanted it to be something that it's like it coexists right along with the real world. It's just a layer away from the real world. That's why it's so cool that, you know, I'm outside of my body. I'm looking at me asleep. I'm interacting with the real world, but it's just like a layer away from reality. So no acid trip, not so much as that. Plus, I don't think we didn't have the money to really go acid trippy anyway.
Well, you never know. I was kind of thinking because I mean the guy even tells you they know those drugs are from 2008.
But even before he takes the drugs, it's just. He starts having astral projections. But what astral projection really is just like your spirit comes out of your body and you're just kind of in a different plane of existence. So that's kind of like a first sci-fi.
So when you were writing your script, did you have a timeline already written out in your head or you just went by the script? Because, I mean, you have a lot of work to do.
Yeah. It started getting confusing after a little bit. The outline is super important for something like time travel. You're like, oh, wait, okay, we already did that, so that means this can't happen anymore. And then we have to go back, and then we have 30 minutes. Yeah, I'm getting confused thinking about it now.
We had a diagram.
Yeah, we did have a diagram.
Yeah.
So I'm going back. I'm going to flip you guys back. And back in your intro video, you guys released how much the film cost you.
Yeah.
Which I thought was very surprising.
Yeah.
Because I find most indie film creators do not want to reveal that.
I know. I've noticed that too, and I've always wondered, like, why can I really would like to know, because then I can know how much I need to invest in my movie. And 13K is surprising to hear, because most of the time you're doing short films and it costs that, you know?
The 13K was our production. Yes.
But that's everything. That's catering, locations, editing.
Not editing. That was our production budget. That's not our post-production section. I tell you, all in, it was like 22. So
how are you going to market this film differently than you marketed your first one?
I think the smartest thing that we learned from the first one is, you know, it's hard to do, it's nice to have a hook like a horror comedy, sci-fi. You know, we got some colorful characters you can point to. We have an, I like our poster as well. We had our poster done by a guy named Mike Gambriel.
He's in the UK.
He's in the UK, did a fantastic poster for us. This one has just been about, like, reaching out to as many niche audience people as possible. Niche being, like, the horror comedy crowd, astral projection enthusiasts, which I'm surprised. There's actually a little corner of those people.
Yeah, like, on Reddit, there's, like, a subcommunity, a subreddit of astral projection.
Yeah.
People who love sci-fi.
And we also hired a publicist.
Oh, yeah.
Justin Cook. He's doing our PR. And so we really want to get this one out there because we want to do more than just this one. We want to do a couple more sequels to this. So it's good to start the groundwork while we can, while we're doing the first one.
So are you taking your film on the road? Are you sending it to Amazon? Or is it going the film festival circuit?
Well, we're still waiting to hear back on some film festivals. I think a film festival would love this movie. I mean, I really want to see this movie on a bigger screen. And I think the sound would be amazing in that theater. We're still waiting to hear about that. It's already on Amazon as we speak. You can go and rent it or buy it on Prime, Amazon Video Direct now. In February, we're going to be releasing it onto iTunes. So that should be a good one, too. As far as being on the road, yeah, you know what we think we want to do? We want to do, like, a college screening, like, somewhere in Arizona.
Especially for filmmaking students or people or students who are studying acting as well. We really believe that, like, the future, you just have to create your own work. So if you're an actor, it behooves you to learn about writing, directing, producing, so on and so forth, because the industry is really competitive, and if you're creating your own work, the likelihood of you getting seen and getting your break is you increase that opportunity, that chance.
I absolutely agree. I think T-shirts would work for you, too, on this one.
Oh, yeah. We want to sell posters, T-shirts. Eventually, we want to sell cereal.
Yeah, exactly. I was getting there. I was going to the cereal, for sure.
We want to create a lunchbox. Actually, we had a soft release. We made some limited edition VHS tapes. We're gonna make some more of those next year, but we sold out in 2 days. Like, that was really cool.
Can I ask how many you made, or is that reaching too far?
Yeah, we did a limited edition run of just 10. So we just did 10 VHSs. Not expecting, honestly, it was like, well, this is going to be a good marketing thing. Let's not worry about if it's sold. But it sold in 2 days, which was like, whoa, people are buying VHS tapes, you know? And that was interesting.
I mean, I think it really helped with that poster, you know, that poster with the vintage VHS look. I mean, people really dug it. It was really cool.
So, Scott, in your second film, what did you learn from your first film filming-wise? Did you learn new techniques?
Well, yeah, I think a lot of it is blocking, learning the blocking within the scene, using the space as much as you can. And then my DP, my director of photography, AJ Young, I mean, I can't do this without a big cast and crew. And we have a very small cast and crew, but everyone pulls their weight a lot. And he brought a lot of cool imagery to it. He was doing these Dutch angles, these tilted angles, and I think he also lit the scene. Our DP did that. He did such a good job. I really think he did a good job in translating the astral world on a very small budget.
Oh, I have to agree with you. Gina, this is a question for you. You've seen both films, as I have. Do you find a big difference between one and two?
Yes, I think I love the first one. It'll always be near and dear to my heart. However, the second one, I mean, you just see the growth from our first film to the second. It's like night and day. We learned a lot more about story. We learned a lot more about filmmaking, just doing research. We really wanted to make something that would appeal to a lot of people, but still, I mean, you can't appeal to everyone, obviously. There's nothing like that exists, but we really felt like Man Day of the Dead was something special, something that needed to be told, and we just knew how to do it.
Well, I'll give you a big positive I noticed in two. I thought your depth of the movie was much greater in two.
Oh, thank you very much.
Like, I actually felt you had a bigger space to work with.
Yeah.
And the way you shot it was much better, I will say. I think you saw your mistakes in one, and I think you really corrected a lot of it in two.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And that's an honest opinion from me watching both films, going, okay, I see where you're going. You're growing. I like to see growth. And I did see growth in your script. And I definitely saw growth in the shooting. And I think, like, I agree, your blocking was much better.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
And you didn't seem to be rushing as much. In the first one, I thought you were rushing a lot.
Yeah, I think we had more time, I guess. It still felt rushed, like, just as in, like, behind the scenes. You know what I mean? Like 10 days to do this was, like, insane.
Yeah, we were shooting, like, 10 pages a day.
Wow.
More.
Yeah, that was insane. And so, like, we really had to ultra-prepare that time with Mandeo. And how we did that was, like, rehearsals. And so by the time everyone got to set, they kind of knew what to do. And we would only do, like, 2 or 3 takes for each part, each shot. Sometimes we'd go over if we didn't get it right.
We have some good bloopers for that.
So my new favorite thing to talk about, which I'm sure we didn't talk about your film, is catering.
Catering.
I always seem to get good catering stories. So how is the catering for the film?
Okay, so for Crafty, I just went. There's this place out here called Food for Less. And it's exactly what it sounds like, a grocery store, but really cheap prices. So that's where I got, like, Crafty. And then I would contact different places for catering. It was kind of hard to find it because my budget was like...
Nothing.
Yeah, nothing, exactly. So it was like 100 a day kind of a thing. And so some people were like, I can only provide soup. And I was like, no thanks. So I found, actually, there's this restaurant called Porto's Bakery, and they had some affordable prices for catering. The only downside was we had to do food pickups, not delivery. So that was annoying because I would have to leave like half hour before lunch. And I'm like also, I'm the AD, so I'm trying to make sure everyone's finishing on time.
She does everything.
Yeah. I had to wear many hats. So like I would have to go and pick up the food and come back. There was another place who catered while we were at the house. Hope Catering, I think they're located in Pasadena. And they were really nice. They accommodated the budget, so that was really, really cool with them.
This is a question I've never asked anybody. So if you guys had $10,000 more, what would you add to your film?
A little more time, a little more special effects work. That would have been nice to have some special effects work. Studio time. Studio time, like a backlot studio, like with more space and some lighting, because I think you could do some really good asphalt there. Have space to do more camera angles. I don't know. Something like that sounds right.
Yeah. I mean, any money would have been great. I mean, if we could find funding to do, because we could do bigger scale things. I mean, with astral projection, you can go to different dimensions. Like, so many different things, and it's just like, we have to stick to our computer budget. I would also probably invest in some publicity, even more publicity, just to get spread the word.
So you leave us kind of with a cliffhanger at the end of this film. I'm not going to ruin it. I'm just going to leave it at that. Is Mandeo going to come back for part two?
Yeah. We got one right. I'm writing one right now. So it feels like it's definitely not cooked up all the way. So I don't know exactly where everything's going all the way. But, yeah, we know what we're doing. We are already in kind of like – reproduction. Our goal is to shoot the sequel in April of next year, 2019.
So not far away.
Too far away. So we love working under the gun here, and I think a lot of this is like online people's attention span. It doesn't last too long. So we have stories to tell about this group of people. Let's tell it now. And
before they lose interest.
Yeah. I mean, there's stories to tell anyway. It's like it's gonna be a joy to make it. So we plan on doing that in April of next year.
Now, my note is, will Gina still be a badass?
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, you know, when you look at what she does, I won't say specifically because you should watch yourself, everyone, but she kind of is the whole reason the whole day is saved, obviously. She's a huge part in this.
Well,
very physical role.
Yes, thank you, but it was a team effort.
Jack, don't do
that. No, it's because Jay tells my character something, well, you know, I should... act, and then Jackson saves me. So then it's, you know, I don't want to spoil too much.
Well, I'm not spoiling anything. I was very good though.
Yeah, you're very good. I'm being bad.
Shame on you, Gina.
Now, we should discuss May, or she's going to be upset.
Yes.
Where did you find your May?
Maeve is a fantastic actress named Marissa Hood. All our actors, they sent in, we did an online audition process. So they sent in videos with a short scene, and he was the best one. I was like, wow, her reel is amazing. She's done some really good work. She's very new to it. And I think she has a bright future ahead of her. She just has this really, I don't know what the quality is about her.
It's more subtle and downplayed. Like, we've seen so many villains where they're over the top and extra crazy. And it's like, what if she just played it, you know, like normal? Like,
I think she has a look though. I think you had to have a look for the film.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think she fit that look. Like she just, I don't know. I believed her when she was getting old.
Okay. I can't ask any more questions because I've been very good about beating around the bush here. And you got to back me up. I think I hit everything. So fun questions time.
Yeah.
Favorite cartoon.
Ooh. Oh boy. Oh, I love Batman, the animated series. I mean, that when I was a kid, that was my favorite.
Oh, man. I really like Hey Arnold.
I've never seen it.
Oh, it's so good.
I watched Batman Animated from day one. I've seen all the commentary tracks for every episode. I'm a diehard Batman Animated fan.
And it's really good too.
Your favorite food besides pizza?
Gosh. Oh, man. My mom makes really good chicken teriyaki with a sauce that she made called Salsa Lisa. Really good. Her name is Lisa.
Oh. Oh man, I love Mexican food. I'm Mexican, so I love Mexican food.
Really? I had no idea.
Yeah, I know. I get that a lot.
No, I definitely, I don't see, I believe you. I'm just shocked. Okay, now the hard film question, because you always get a film question, you do that. A film you wish you had directed? Or, I'll give you a choice, or a film you've never seen and should have.
What where is that one? Oh, no. That's a good question. Gina's going to answer it first.
What? Okay. So it was a film that you always wanted to direct?
Or I'll give you a second option, or you can tell me a film you've never seen and should have.
Never seen and should have. Okay. Oh, man.
I gave you options tonight. I was being nice.
You're good. You know what? Actually, I got to say, Child's Play was recent for me. I've never seen that.
You're not missing anything.
I thought it was okay. You know, I thought it was going to be way worse, you know?
No, it's that? Okay. The first one, don't watch anymore. Stop.
Just stop.
I've seen them all. Stop after one.
You know, the directing question is a tough one because, like, I think one of my favorites also is like Back to the Future and Inception. I wouldn't want to touch those because I'd screw it up. Like, but it doesn't stop me from fantasizing about wanting.
Yeah, for me it would be El Mariachi.
Oh, wow!
Because to me that's just a low budget Indian. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't seen that, by the way.
Oh well, there you go. Go see El Mariachi.
I haven't seen it either.
It's a Mexican film, so I'm going to totally hammer you on that one.
What am I doing?
Well, I want to tell everybody again where they can find your movie. I think you said Amazon, iTunes, VHS, if you want to buy one. Where can I buy one?
Okay, so we're going to have – I'll keep everyone posted on our social media. We'll have some VHS limited edition tapes next year. Not sure exactly when because we have to invest in the sequel. But we will be on iTunes in February. And also we're going to do DVD Blu-ray too next year
sometime.
Probably in the fall.
Awesome. And get set for Madeo 2 at some point?
Yeah.
Yeah, it should be out in 2020. So we'll be busy shooting. We'll keep up with our Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. We'll keep everyone up to date on there.
Great. Thank you as always. You guys were great. I hope you had fun.
We always do, and we miss you, and thank you so much for having us on.
And I guess you'll be back in 2020 if I'm still alive.
Yeah, you'll be alive. Come on.
I'm getting old. You never know. Thank you for your time. Have a great night.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page? Thank you.